This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Harry Clark with a bonus performance of Lillian, written by David Cale. Harry Clark, performed by Billy Crudup, directed by Lee Silverman.
I could always do an immaculate English accent. Ever since I was a little kid, I don't know where it came from. English TV shows on PBS or English movies. I don't remember much about my childhood, but I remember laying out on a football field in school in South Bend, Indiana, with this kid from my class, Chris Keene, and saying, I could be myself if I had an English accent. And Chris Keene staring at me blankly, not saying a word, but me, knowing I had just uncovered what would be one of the fundamental truths of my life. My mom died when I was 15, and my dad died just before my 18th birthday, and after he died, I went through all of his possessions, came across an 8mm film that in 4 minutes crystallizes my whole childhood. The film was taken just after my mom and dad and I had moved from Evanston to South Bend. Somebody had given my dad a camera and a tripod. This was his one attempt at using it. And in the film, he's interviewing me in the front yard. I'm about 8 years old at the time. He says to me, "What do you think of the new house, Phil?" My name was Philip Brugelstein then. And I answer, "Oh, it's a lovely, father." I was posher then. My dad yells out, "Lois, he's speaking in the goddamn English accent again!" My mother comes into the shot and says, "Don't upset your father." I say, "But it's my real voice." And my dad loses it.
"Phil, you're an American. You were born in Illinois. No one in this family has ever been to Europe. You don't stop talking in that pretty Brit accent. I'm taking you to the doctor. He says, you need electroshock to cure you. I'm going to let him plug you into the goddamn wall. You want to get electrocuted, huh? Huh?"
And my mother starts screaming, "Jack, don't scare him." And I'm yelling, "It's my voice, Mommy. I can't help how I sound."
And my father hollers, "You wanted to keep the kid. You deal with this."
Storms off. My mother runs after him, and in the background of the 8mm film, you hear, "What the hell is that supposed to mean? Don't you ever talk like that in front of him again. You're a pig. I cannot wait to leave you. Why was I thinking it was going to be any different when we moved to Indiana? Don't you raise a finger with me." They're battling it out in the kitchen. I'm left standing alone in front of the camera, which is still running. And I start clowning around with this character that I'd come up with. Harry Clark. I'm 8 years old, looking into the camera, going, "Hello, my name's Harry Clark. You all right?
Don't get your knickers in a twist, darling. Why are these people yelling all the time? Come off it, they're bonkers. Feel like I'm living in a bloody madhouse. I'm Harry Clark, and I'm going to mess you up. 'Cause I'm Harry Clark." "Yeah."
My dad comes into the frame and goes, "And you want to know why you get kicked around at school?" Whaps me on the side of the head and the screen goes blank. After my father's funeral, I donated the contents of our house to Goodwill. I put the house on the market. When I found a buyer, I took the money and walked away from Indiana. I got on a plane to New York. And from the day I landed, I only spoke with an English accent. And if anyone asked where I was from, I told them I was from Elstree, north of London, where the film studios are. I felt liberated. Special. I felt like I was finally being myself. When I got into my 30s, I thought of leveling with people about where I came from. To test the water, I told one person who moved to the West Coast, "We don't have any friends in common." He had such an adverse response.
"I'll never see you in the same light. I'll never see you the same way."
He stopped returning my calls. I thought, not telling anyone else. All my friends in New York know me as an English person. The Evanston and South Bend years seem like such a thing of the past, irrelevant to me now, so I'm just going to leave things the way that they are, get on with my life. And I didn't think about Harry Clark for years, till one day he reappeared. It was a strange time. I wasn't working, didn't know what to do with myself. I'm wandering around Midtown Manhattan, 6th Avenue and 49th. There's a guy walking ahead of me, and I don't know why I did this and what made me choose to do it with him, but I thought, I'm going to follow that guy and see where he goes. He walks south on 6th. I trail behind him. This must be what a stalker feels like, or a private detective, or a cop. He crosses the avenue at 48th. I do the same. He ducks into the gap. I follow him into the store. He picks up 4 packs of grey boxer briefs. There's a large sign above them. Special sale. 2 packs of 2 for $20. I hang near the jeans while he stands on line to pay, and when he leaves the store, I follow him out along 46th, keeping about 30 feet behind him. Where are we headed? I'm thinking. Where are you leading me? He goes into the Dean and DeLuca in the lobby of the Paramount Hotel. I wait a few moments and follow him inside. When I get up to the counter, he's paying for an iced coffee. I order an espresso and sit at the empty table next to him. He reaches into his pocket for a little pill container, takes 2 white tablets out of it. I can't read what the label says, washes them down with iced coffee and gets on his phone. I hear him say, Sabine, I don't want to go to couples counseling. I've made the decision.
Sabine!
Sabine, you're not listening to me. It's over. Then he says a few sentences in French, and the call ends, as though this Sabine had hung up on him. He dials another number. I hear him say,
Jed, hey, look, I got some family stuff I have to attend to unexpectedly. I'm not coming back to the office. Gonna head back to Connecticut.
When he hangs up, I think to myself, what are you doing? Get out of here! Leave! On the street, I figure no harm done. He had no idea I was following him. I just got a little glimpse into somebody's life. I won't do it again. It was just my morning for doing something I'd never done before. Now I know what it's like to follow a stranger around. A few months later, I go to see a play in a little theater in Tribeca. The lights come up for intermission. The person sitting across the aisle from me looks familiar, and I'm thinking, where do I know that face from? I know you from somewhere. I realize it's the guy I followed that day. I must have been staring at him as I tried to figure out who he was, because when I came out of my own head, he was glaring at me. Without thinking, I squint up my eyes and say, Sorry, I didn't mean to stare. I think we've met before. With Sabine?
Oh, yeah,
he says, trying to make it seem like he remembers.
What's your name again?
I feel a surge of panic. What the hell am I going to say? Paralyzed for a moment. Then, oddly calm. It's like another force is pulling me out of my seat toward him. I get up. Look him in the eye, extend my hand and say,
I'm Harry Clark. What's your name again? Mark Schmidt.
Pleased to re-meet you, Mark Schmidt. You enjoying a play?
It's unusual to be in the theater and
feel tension. This play, it's like a mystery. In that sense, seems more like a movie. You on your own?
I couldn't find anyone to come with me. My friend's on the board of the theater, wanted to be supportive, got a very good review.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't understand why anyone would read reviews. Why would you want to know what's going to happen? Isn't one of the powers of art rooted in the element of surprise? I remember years ago seeing that film, Sexy Beast. I didn't know a thing about it. From the title, I assumed it was going to be one of those softcore porn films the English are partial to. But it was nothing at all, as I imagined. All these former criminals laying low in Spain. It was fabulous. But part of what made it great for me was I knew absolutely nothing about it. The impact of the film was connected to the unknown.
I'm guessing by your accent you're from London?
Could you tell? Wish I could remember where we met. I don't know why I'm thinking it was Connecticut.
I used to live in Stamford when I was with Sabine. I was gonna get a drink. Can I get you something?
Oh, thanks. Whatever you're having, surprise me. Comes back from the concession stand, hands me a drink.
Sabine and I separated. Oh, I'm sorry. I moved into Manhattan. She's talking about moving back to Paris.
Oh, I hope she does. I'd be happy to never run into her again.
You married?
Nah. Never met the right bird.
Bird?
Girl? Chick? Woman?
Oh, funny! How the English call them birds and the Americans call them chicks. I wonder where all this avian terminology hails from.
Wine's pretty good for something that comes in a plastic cup. The lights begin flashing. We take our seats. I can't concentrate on the second half of the play. I feel like I've had an out-of-body experience. Harry Clark was a character I did for myself. Harry Clark had never made an appearance in New York. I'll make a quick exit at the end of the show. I think I don't need to talk to that guy again, but there's a bottleneck of people at the front of the theater, and coming from directly behind me, I hear...
I can see why you don't read reviews, Harry. Wish I hadn't known the brother wasn't who he said he was.
I turn back, and Harry Clark kicks in.
I could eat a fucking pony. I'm gonna get something to eat. You want to join me?
You know, I haven't eaten since this morning.
Come on, you got to eat.
Walking through the street, I notice my walk has changed. My posture is different. I'm standing up straight. I seem to have a whole new internal life. We go to a fish restaurant. After we order, he asks me what I do for a living.
Right now, nothing. I'm unemployed. But for the last 20 years up until last year, I was a tour manager slash personal assistant slash whatever else was needed type person for a recording artist in England. Anyone I might know?
And just one word flies out of my brain, out through my mouth, makes its home in the world.
Sade?
Sade, oh man, how cool, what's she like?
Well, she is about the most real person on the... What's she like? She's funny, loyal, kind, extremely astute about people emotionally. A little bit of a recluse. You have to pull her out of her shell sometimes. I was with her for 20 years. She's one of my closest friends at this point. Though I can't say I've seen her much of late. When I left the job, I felt I needed to shake things up in my life, so I got on a plane. And here I am. And what do you do?
Building appraisals for banks and insurance companies? Not very interesting. Sometimes I feel I've got this more adventurous, artistic side of me wiggling to get out.
Oh, let him out! Give him the run of the place!
Easy to say. I realized recently I have such a recognizable life. It's interchangeable with any number of people. And indistinct life.
My life's had no planning. It's an intuitive trail that goes where it wants to go. I feel like fate is pulling me along. I happened to meet Sade in a pub in East London when she was just getting started. That became what that was. I happened to meet you in Connecticut. Now here we are.
I wish I could have more of a connection to the art. I think about producing movies. I know people with money. I could find investors. But then everyone tells me you can't make money in independent films. So I back off.
You got to get a little ballsy sometimes. Find a script you like and just throw yourself into it.
I need to be around more people like you, Harry. Everyone I know is so cautious. They'd never get up and move to another country because they wanted a change.
I thought England doesn't suit me right now. I need to feel like a stranger in town. So here I am, a stranger in a strange land. Some people live their lives so seriously. I'm having fun with mine.
We keep talking and polish off two bottles of wine.
Look, my place is literally four blocks from here. I have this potato vodka from Lithuania. Come back. I'll make you a nightcap that'll put color in your dreams. Sure, I say. We stand up to leave. He slaps me on the shoulder. You're a cool guy, Harry Clark. His apartment is on the 11th floor of a new building in Tribeca overlooking the river. He mixes us the strongest martini I've ever had in my life. Asks me what my honest take on Sabine is. I tell him I only met her once. One thing I know, I had a lot more hang-ups after our relationship than I had going into it. I ask him what he means. But suddenly in the middle of making love, she'd say something like, Mark, don't do that with your tongue. I'd ask, do what? She'd say, you're making your tongue go hard when you kiss me. I don't like it. And I'd say, I have no idea what you're talking about, Sabine. She'd say, well, just keep your tongue soft. So for weeks afterwards, every time we were intimate, I'd be crippled with self-consciousness. Or she'd say, you're so tender and sensitive. I feel like I'm having sex with another woman. Now we're a pair of lesbians. And then she got into this whole gay thing with me. I can't believe I'm telling you this shit. It's the potato vodka and the tempranillo talking. Oh, she'd say, I feel like I'm with a man who has never really explored who he is sexually. Ask Fred. We had this gay friend, Fred. Call him up. Ask him if he'll come over and fuck you next time I'm in France. Tell him I give him my blessing. He'll wear a condom. He won't catch anything. You're blushing. Of course I'm blushing, Sabine. I'd say I'm embarrassed for you. I'm making another drink. You having one? Why not? I say, trying to say as little as possible so he wouldn't be able to tell them I was having trouble keeping my words from sliding into one another. We finish up the martinis. He glances at his watch. Man, I gotta be up in 4 hours. I gotta get to bed. 5 minutes later, I'm in the back of a cab, hurtling up the FDR. That was the weirdest night of my life. What the hell are you doing? I wake up groggy and dehydrated, pick up my jeans off the floor, a business card falls out. Mark Schmidt, Vice President, Redmond Appraisals. I remembered I'd given him my home phone number and that my name is on the outgoing message of the answering machine, so before I have coffee, I change it to simply, please leave a message. By late afternoon, the whole thing is off my mind. I'm drifting in and out of a Raymond Chandler short story when the home phone rings. Coming out of the answering machine, I hear, Harry Clark, Mark Schmidt here. So much fun last night. Hey, look, man, tell me if you're not up for this. My folks have a boat they keep up in Rhode Island, and my mom's a huge Sade fan, and my sister's a singer-songwriter. My mom wants to meet you, and my dad wants my sister to play you some of her songs. Have you give her your professional advice? They're up in Newport right now. They invited us to spend the weekend on the boat. I know I hardly know you. I lunge at the phone. Mark Schmidt, star of Last Night. Yeah, I'd love to come to Rhode Island.
You know, I could take Friday off and we could get a head start on the weekend.
Sounds groovy. I'll swing by your apartment 10 a.m. Friday morning, okay?
I put down the phone and it's like a fever flaring up. I go to the computer. Do a search for the names of travel agents in London, write down the number of one and dial it, get the after-hours answering machine with a brief message. Hanging up, I program the travel agent's number into my phone, list it as Sade, home. The next few days, I read everything I can get my hands on about Sade, every interview, every profile, and on the Friday morning, Mark Schmidt and Harry Clark are heading north up I-95.
Harry, I warn you, my dad seems like a tough guy. He's all heart. Don't let him intimidate you. He's actually in bad health. Doesn't have much longer, though. You'd never know it. Oh, and my mom has really big hair. I don't know. The older she gets, the bigger she seems to like it. You're going to think it's a wig. It's not a wig.
The ride takes 5 hours, and we pull into a parking lot in Newport, walk to the harbor.
There's the Jewish American princess, he says.
The what?
The Jewish American princess. It's the name of the boat.
Pointing at what must have been a several million-dollar yacht.
Whoa, I think. We are in the land of serious money.
Mrs. Schmidt greets us, her hair
is huge. She throws her arms around me and says, I'm gonna hug you, even though I don't know you. Mr. Schmidt shakes my hand and doesn't say a whole lot. Below deck, the spare bedroom looks like a mini hotel room. Mark says,
I'll take the floor. I brought a sleeping bag with me.
I feel like an imposter. I feel like someone who's broken into someone's home. Till 15 minutes later, when we start hitting the cocktails, I'd never seen people drink like it. And Harry takes to holding court.
I'm gonna get Sade on the phone.
Mrs. Schmidt says, I can't believe this. I take out the phone, lay it on the table, and program in Sade. Mrs. Schmidt's eyes are glued to the little screen. Up comes Sade Home and the English phone number. I press call, get up from the table, and pace. On the other end of the phone, I hear, you have reached the offices of Blackburn Travel.
Oh, damn, it's gone to voicemail!
The office is closed. If you'd like to leave a message, one of our representatives will call you back in the morning. Thank you. Beep.
Sade! It's Harry! I'm on a boat off Rhode Island in America, if you could believe, with some friends of mine. I was just thinking about you, thought I'd give you a call, see how you are.
Everyone on the deck is riveted. I look over at Mark's mother.
You want to say something to Sade?
My friend Mrs. Schmidt wants to say hello. Sade, hi. Ruth, Schmidt, we love your music. Thank you for all of the pleasure you have given us over the years. And we're really enjoying Soldier of Love. Take care, Sade. All right, love. Look after yourself. I'll show you another time. Big kiss.
Ruth Schmidt goes off like a firework.
Oh, my God! I've got to call Peggy! Peggy! I just left a message on Sade's answering machine!
How many people are called Sade, Peggy? Yes, Sade, Sade! Mark leans into me.
Thank you, man. You've just made her year.
I lean into him and whisper,
your mom's very sweet.
And as I do it, my lower lip brushes his ear. That was a bit of all right, I think. So I do it again.
Your dad's nice, too.
Stephanie Schmidt arrives in the late afternoon, mid-30s, bright red hair, carrying a beaten-up guitar case. I think, this is going to be excruciating, like one of those American Idol auditions. On the deck of the boat, she takes out the guitar, begins to slap it.
I found a condom in your car. I found a condom in your car. I found a condom in your car. So, yes, it's over.
Mrs. Schmidt jumps up.
Stephanie, we have boat neighbors. Please, enough with the condoms.
Stephanie rolls her eyes, says,
why don't I just play Harry a track on the headphones?
Sets me up with a song called He's Coming Over to Paint Me. It's a ballad, plain and real. I try to encourage her. She isn't particularly interested in a career. I write songs because it gives me pleasure and because it expresses something for me. When I'm writing, I have a different energy, and people always seem to gravitate towards me more when I'm being artistic.
Mr. Schmidt says, give Harry a copy of your CD, maybe he'll play it for Sade.
And I feel embarrassed and wretched, small. The rest of the day is a rolling sea of dirty martinis. In the evening, Mark and I go into the bedroom. By this point, both of us are drunk. He pulls out the sleeping bag and folds it on the floor.
That's ridiculous. You can't sleep on the floor. Lay up here in the bed. What's the big deal?
He gathers up the sleeping bag, lays it on top of the bed.
Dude, it's 85 degrees. You don't need a sleeping bag. You just need a sheet. Don't be such a girl. Get in the bed. I want to go to sleep. I am just your little bitch, aren't I? Yeah, you are. Don't make me have to slap you around. Ooh,
and slap his ass.
Get in the fucking bed.
He gets on the top and pulls the sheet over him, turning his back to me. Night, honey bunny.
Nighty-night, sweetheart.
He falls asleep quickly. I can't sleep. So I get up, I leave the boat, go for a walk around Newport at night, find a little gay bar, one of the few things still open, go in, and sit up at the bar with a drink. There's a kid on his own, perched along from me. We catch each other's eyes. He says,
I couldn't get to sleep.
I mouth, me neither. The place is quiet. Then, some music comes on.
Hey, you want to dance?
Come on, let's dance.
My name is Harry.
Yeah, I'm English.
Just visiting. My wife and I are staying with my friend on his boat. She's asleep, I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk. Here I am. What's your name?
Luke.
Luke, you're very cute. I'm direct. We live in Camden. And where do you live? Oh, you still live with mom and dad. That's cool. What's my wife's name? Why do you want to know what my wife's name is? Sabine. Her name is Sabine. She's French. Frances. I met her in Paris. What am I doing in a gay bar? Dancing. And what are you doing in a gay bar, sunshine? Huh. Yeah. I bet you are.
I come out of the bathroom, close the door as quietly as I can. Mark turns over under the sheet.
Where did you go?
I went for a walk.
Shower woke me up.
It's hot outside. I took a shower. I'm sorry I woke you up.
I get into the bed.
My sister likes you. Oh, I like your sister too. Go back to sleep.
My face is facing his back. I can smell the laundry detergent on his t-shirt. I'm breathing it in. And suddenly I feel I've got on a ride I can't get off. On the deck of the boat, Mark taps my shoulder.
What are you listening to?
Soundtrack of a French thriller.
Look, change your plan. Dad's not feeling well, Mom doesn't want to drive, so Stephanie's taking them home. Next 2 hours, my friend, we've got the boat to ourselves.
The Jewish American Princess had 2 full-time crew members. Mark tells them they can have the night off. The captain looks concerned.
Are you sure you can handle the boat alone, boss?
Mark's response is,
I know how to navigate this, baby.
Before I know it, Rhode Island is a thin line on a pretty far away horizon. 5 miles or so off the coast, he throws one anchor off the port of the boat. A second anchor off the starboard.
So what am I going to do with my life, Harry Clark? I'm 38 years old, man. I'm unfulfilled. I need a change. I need a dirty martini, and so do you.
Round 11, we go below deck. Starts to undress. Standing there in nothing but his underwear, he announces,
"Let's go up, have a nightcap, it's so warm."
Tramps out of the room. I'm reeling from all the booze. On deck, he leans over the edge of the boat, balancing a martini. I think for sure he's going to drop overboard. He yells out at the empty sea,
"I like you, Harry Clark!"
Knocks back the martini, gets a refill from the shaker.
"What makes you special, Harry? My talent is I know how to make money. What do you think is your gift or your talent or your best attribute?"
"My resilience. My instincts. That's one thing about myself I always trust. My intuition.
And what?"
he says, putting his drink down. And I can feel myself lighting a match to play with fire.
"What?"
"I'm a little bit psychic."
Yeah, I don't believe in that shit. All the psychics setting up shop in New York, it's such bullshit. Okay, so give me an example of your psychic powers.
"All right. Those boxer briefs. You got them at the Gap in Midtown Manhattan, 6th Avenue and 48th. You bought 4 packs of 2. They were on special sale, 2 packs for $20.
How did you know that? That's incredible and fucking amazing. What else can you see with your psychic powers?"
"Oh, I don't know.
Tell me."
"Well, I could see me saying to you, I think you should take those boxer briefs off and make your way over here."
English! You guys can get away with saying anything! Fucking Harry Clark, motherfucker!
He picks up the martini, takes another slurp, puts it down.
"All right then, with these psychic powers of yours, what do you see me saying in response?"
"I'll see you saying you've got the wrong guy."
"And then?"
"Me saying, you're so predictable."
Suddenly, he pulls the boxer briefs down and hurls them at me.
"Was that predictable?"
I catch them, which in itself is unpredictable.
Philip Rugelstein couldn't catch a ball to save his life, but Harry Clark could somehow nonchalantly raise his arm in the air and catch a pair of flying underwear from the Gap with effortless grace.
"No, that wasn't predictable. Was this?"
The boxer briefs float momentarily on the surface of the dark Atlantic Ocean, then disappear out of sight.
"Well, are you going to come over here, or do I have to come over there and get you?"
In the car on the way back to New York, we don't speak for about 80 miles, and then he says, "That was a big fucking mistake last night, man.
A big fucking mistake. I gotta quit drinking. And if I can't do it on my own, I've got to go to AA.
Let me ask you a question. Did you have an orgasm?"
"Was it small? Medium?
Or in the vernacular of your local Starbucks, could it best be described as grande? Fenty? Doppio? Careful, I think we're coming to a toll."
There's no goodbye from Mark as I get out of the car, or if there is, I don't hear it. When I get up to my apartment, I make a beeline for the bathroom, leaning over the toilet, feeling I'm going to throw up or faint or both. "What the hell were you doing? You can never do that again. It's a moot point. It's obviously the last you'll ever see of Mark. Why is it that when I'm myself, I'm so fearful all the time? Timid. So wrapped up in what people are thinking about me, but when I'm Harry Clark, I don't give a shit. I'm absolutely, exhilaratingly, alarmingly free. That was so sexy on the boat. Mama, that was the deep end of sexy.
Stick with me, kid.
I don't have a hang-up in the world.
This was late June. Early October, I'm walking on the Upper East Side, and coming from behind me, I hear, Harry? Harry! First, I'm disoriented. I turn around. There's a girl with her red hair pulled into a wool cap. Stephanie! Mark Schmidt's sister. Oh, hello.
What did you do to my crazy brother?
What do you mean?
He came back from that weekend with you on the boat, straight away proposed to his yoga teacher, who he'd been dating for about a minute. 3 weeks later, they were married.
Oh, didn't know.
I thought I'd see you at the wedding. Guess I wasn't invited.
You didn't miss anything. It was all his awful macho jock friends.
So, what are you doing now?
Oh, little this, little that, not too much of anything.
Hey, I'm singing a new song of mine, a cappella, at the opening of my friend's show tonight at Joe's Pub. I bought a ticket for someone who can't go now, so I have this free ticket. You want to go?
It's just a $12 minimum.
Thanks. Maybe I will. Is Mark going to be there?
My crazy brother does not come to my shows.
Besides, we had this big falling out, so... Are you
going to come? Come on. Come to my show. Come see my show, Harry Clark. I sit on a stool at Joe's Pub. Survey the wall of photos of people who had performed there in the past. Leonard Cohen, Elvis Costello, Alan Cumming, Adele. Suddenly, I think, fuck, you better check the wall for Sade. If she's performed at Joe's Pub, you should know about it. But Sade is nowhere to be seen. Stephanie walks out on stage. A light comes up on her, and she starts to sing.
I want a wide back, boy. Won't give me a wide back, boy. I want a different kind of love. I want to find my joy. I want to lose my grip. And I want to wake my hips. Want to do some things I've never done before. Oh, give me a wide back, boy. A pretty wide back, boy. With a sparkling in his eyes, he's gonna light the light inside me. Wanna lose my head and laugh in bed. Do some things I've never done before. I'm so tired of feeling kinda lonely. And I'm so tired of feeling kind of blue. I'm so tired of waking up alone each day. I want to say loneliness, hey, fuck you. I got a wide back, boy, a witty wide back, boy. With a wild imagination, Lord, he treats me like a plaything. Gonna lose our grip and sail our ship. Do some things we've never done before. Oh, I wanna do some things I've never done before. I wanna do some things I've never done before. Where's my wide back, boy?
After the show, Stephanie invites me to go to a diner with her for apple pie. Mid-pie, she says to me,
I'm sure my brother is gay.
Drives me crazy that he won't get over his machismo and admit it to himself, particularly since our dad died.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Well, our father was very homophobic.
Mark, years ago, had this older friend, Michael, who he was so obviously in love with. It's funny,
When I first met you, I thought, oh my God, that guy looks so much like Michael, except you're not blonde. Michael, even though he was receding, one day decided to dye his hair trashy blonde.
Trashy blonde?
Yeah, you know that overtly peroxide look where the dark roots deliberately show? He and Mark were going to produce movies together, but he died suddenly. Some undetected bone marrow disease, and Mark was... You couldn't go near him. He was inconsolable. He then made a grand show of going from one bimbo girl to another, finally careening into the evil Sabine, who I always felt just married him so that she could get a green card. Now this yoga teacher, Lexi, oh my God, is this girl boring? She walks into a room and sucks the air out of it. I'm such a bitch. Our father's will left Mark very comfortably off. My point being, my brother doesn't need to work anymore, which is really the worst thing for him. He spends all of his time now going to the gym and, from what I hear, doing a tremendous amount of cocaine and God knows what else. You know he's always had an issue with drugs. Been in and out of treatment since he was 17. I walk her to the subway. She kisses me on the lips. First, I can't tell if it's a kiss, or just a kiss goodnight. A second kiss makes the picture clearer. I shouldn't do this. I live with someone. I'm sorry. Hey, thanks for coming to the gig. Appreciate it. I write down Harry Clark and my number on the show's program, hand it to her.
If you ever need a break from your boyfriend, give me a call.
Nice to be offered temptation.
Everyone should be offered temptation at least once a month. Keeps a spring in your step.
I'll remember that.
Hey, there's no expiration date on the offer. I'll remember that too.
She heads down the steps of the subway, then turns back around. I'm feeling neglected. Do you have a mint and a place to go?
Got a place to go, but I can't supply the mint.
I drank an espresso before the show. I think I need a mint. She ducks into Walgreens. I stand on the sidewalk outside thinking, what the hell are you doing? You cannot take her back to your apartment. There's a Philip Brugelstein Con Edison bill on the table, a Philip Brugelstein AT&T bill.
Don't get your knickers in the twist, darling.
We cab it uptown. In the entrance of my building, Stephanie glances at the door buzzers. Which one are you?
4B.
Who's Philip Brugelstein?
Gosh, sublet the place from.
In the apartment, she makes a beeline for the DVDs.
Somebody likes movies.
They're Phillips.
I've never seen so many film noirs and thrillers.
Well, I don't think he has much of a life.
Is that a phone answering machine? Haven't seen one of those in years. Is that a phone from the 1920s attached to it?
I think it's 1941. Wow.
Fits right in with the movies.
She takes off her coat, checks her watch. Okay, we've got 45 minutes.
What if I want to go into overtime?
If we go into overtime, my union will come down heavily on me, so no going over. We go to kiss, and the kiss is interrupted by the sounds of a trilling canary coming out of a pocket. My phone. Forgot to turn it off. It's home. Probably calling to see where I am. I'm sorry. I should go. This is not the answer to my feelings of ambivalence. She picks up her coat.
Remember, there's no sell-by date on the offer.
Grins. Then she's gone. I needed cash. The money I'd got from selling my dad's house had run to almost nothing. Pick up a job as a barista in a Madison Avenue pastry cafe. Life returns to the unimaginative and the demeaning. I get treated slightly better than the other people working there because I have an English accent. La Capuchine is a real watering hole for snobs. Snobs and models and over-caffeinated ladies who lunch, who only really engage with me when they want recommendations of places to go and sights to see in London, a town I'd never been to in my life. I'm spending most of my spare time on my own, and I find myself reflecting too much. I think about my father's funeral and my father's friend, Bill Horseman, berating me.
Philip, you knew your father was a severe alcoholic, and letting him take the tractor out at night in such an inebriated state was just calling for an accident. You should have stopped him.
And my responding, maybe if he didn't call me faggot every 5 minutes, I would have tried. I think about that night, and what a pig my dad was being.
Every kid in the neighborhood wants to sit on my tractor, but not my kid. My kid just wants to pansy around with his faggoty English accent. What is wrong with you? Hey? Hey?
Slapping my head, pinning me up against a wall, and Harry Clark rearing up, grabbing him by the throat, yelling,
"Chill out, you small-minded, ignorant motherfucker! What, you're a goddamn cockney now? You need a stiff drink. I've been on the wagon for 3 months. Well, sweetheart, it's time to get off. Sit down. I'm fixing you a drink."
Dad knocking back a rye whiskey. And another, and another. Harry Clark saying, "Well, aren't you going to give me a driving lesson?" Dad staggering out the back door, hearing him start the engine, lose his balance and fall forward into the path of the moving tractor. How his last word on this earth was a half-word. Mother... The sound of the unmanned tractor smashing into the neighbor's car, and Harry Clark saying, "Just go to bed, go to sleep, you were asleep when it happened." The police officer waking me up and saying,
"Phil, there's been a terrible accident."
And all I could think as the police officer looked sympathetically at me was, "Oh my God, you have the most beautiful eyes. Tell everyone to go home and come to bed." And as the ambulance took my dad's body away, feeling absolutely nothing except fascination for the paleness of that young cop's blue eyes, I always thought the stress of living with my dad caused the cancer that killed my mother. But that was all in the past. The present is the tedium of La Cappuccine and struggling to make ends meet in New York. When it comes to work, I have no skills. I'm not much use to anyone. One night in my apartment, I yell out in frustration,
"I'm so sick of my life! All my friends have drifted away. All I do is work. I need a change. I need a fucking change."
And as my poor mother used to say, "From your mouth to God's ears." I'm lying in bed. 1 o'clock in the morning, phone rings. I'm thinking, who the hell is calling me at this hour? Machine picks up and I hear,
"Harry, hey, it's Mark Schmidt. Been meaning to call you, man. A lot of crazy stuff to tell. I got married. Total fucking mistake. I broke it off. She moved out. Bought a new apartment. I'm having it renovated, so I'm staying at the Paramount Hotel for a few weeks. You want to come over and hang out in the room? It's room 615. Come over, man. Anytime. Don't be afraid of waking me up. I want to see you."
Pulled the covers over me, thinking,
"Don't go."
Eventually fell asleep. In the morning, I replay the message, and Harry Clark rears up.
"I think we should get our hair dyed blonde and pay a little visit to room 615 at the Paramount Hotel and just see what happens."
Next thing, I'm on the phone.
"Hello, I'd like to get my hair dyed blonde. What's the earliest you could do it?" "You had a cancellation." "Yeah, I could be there at 11. "Clark, with an E." "Thank you."
And when I hang up, I realize I've just made an appointment under Harry's name. Before I can think about it too much, I'm sitting in a salon explaining to a colorist exactly what I mean by trashy blonde. Have a shift from 4 to 10 that evening at La Cappuccine. I'm standing behind the counter when the manager signals me over.
"Philip, you can't work here looking like that. I'm gonna have to let you go."
Harry Clark kicks in.
Oh, this is bullshit. If I was a girl and went blonde, I'd be swimming in a sea of compliments. And what about you, with your boot-polished black-dye job?
There's something oddly therapeutic to be physically thrown out of a place you hated working in. 11 o'clock that evening, I'm standing outside the Paramount Hotel, taking in the irony of being back at the place where I'd first followed Mark to. Slip into the men's room on the ground floor, look into my own eyes reflected in the mirrored walls, and Harry Clark has a heart-to-heart with me.
I think the dramatic change you've been looking for is standing right in front of you. Hello. Pleased to meet you. I'm your new life. Give me 3 months where you're only me. A trial offer, shall we say.
Be Harry Clark for 90 days if you're not completely satisfied.
Your life is a broken record. It's time to shatter the tune. Be me for 3 months and see what happens. Go on. Give it a whirl.
Next thing I'm moseying through the lobby of the Paramount Hotel with, shall we say, the confidence of a guest. Call out to the desk clerk. Good night, love. Elevator up to room 615. Mark opens the door wearing sweatpants and a Mets t-shirt.
Harry! I'm so happy to see you, man!
Who is this skinny guy hugging me? Hello. Before Mark had a bit of a belly, belly is gone. He's lean and Jimmy-fied.
When I get all the way in the room, I pull off the woolen hat I have on, give him the big reveal.
You're blonde.
Needed to shake things up a bit.
Oh, my God, Harry, you look so much like my friend Michael, who died.
Oh, really?
It's unbelievable, man.
He crumbles onto the bed.
I think some people that come in to your life are a kind of test run for someone who will come into your life later. Am I making sense? Shit, I've had too much ecstasy. Man, I think there's something meant to be about the two of us. What do you think? Tell me what you think.
I'll tell you what I think. I think I was thinking the same thing as I was just walking into the hotel. I think it's very nice to see you. I think you look rather dishy in that ripped at the collar Mets t-shirt. I think I don't miss your little belly at all. I think I should flip that do not disturb sign to the other side of the door. I think you should fix us 2 drinks from that no doubt exorbitantly priced hotel room bar. And I think we've got some making up to do. 3 days later, I waltz out of room 615 thinking, Gordon Bennett, what have I unleashed? He's like a bloody rabbit. A rabbit that does a lot of ecstasy. The old twigs and berries got a real workout. I've gone 3 blocks when I get a text. I miss you. Another 10 blocks, second text pops up. Hey man, don't tell anyone about us. Our secret, okay? I'll text back, okay. In the apartment, I put some music on and stare into the mirror. Fuck you, Mark. I'm starting to fall in love with you.
I think I'm a little bit in love with you.
No, that's awful. I'm sticking my neck out by saying this. Don't look at me like that. I think I'm falling for you. I've got such a crush on you. All right, I'll just say it. Hey, Mark, I'm in love with you.
I'm in love with you, you dope.
I feel uncharacteristically vulnerable right now.
Mark, I love you. I love you, Mark.
No, not sexy.
You fucking asshole, I'm falling in love with you.
I've never quite felt like this before. I can't stop thinking about you. You're like an obsession, the way you taste, the way you look. Watching you sleep, I'm so full of feeling, I think I'm going to burst. I'm fucking falling in love with you, Mark Schmidt. I'm falling in love with you. Yeah, that's the one. I'm fucking falling in love with you, Mark Schmidt.
Mark's new place is a stunning loft on Lafayette Street. I'm spending most of my time there. On the one hand, he says I should move a load of my clothes in. On the other, he's terrified people will put two and two together that we're having it off. When anyone comes over, all my stuff gets bundled into a closet, and I'll go for a walk, or go uptown, or go see a movie. It's annoying and tiresome, and kind of sexy, being someone's secret life. I'll meet some of these so-called friends. Bunch of privileged wankers whose only money worries in life are what to do with it all. I'm not blowing my own home, but alongside these tossers, I can see why he's enamored of me. After a few months of being in the orbit of money jocks and the steel-eyed birds that go for that sort of thing, I'm getting bored. I need to have a little bit of fun. Mark's mum, Ruth, who I did have a soft spot for, had moved from Maine to a house in Cherry Hill, New Jersey after the old man died. I says to Mark, curiously, after being Cherry Hill to meet a music biz guy, why don't I call your mom when I'm out there? Oh man, my mom would be over the moon. She's so smitten with you. So I'll give Ruth a tinkle. Hello, love, you up for a visit?
Harry, yes, come over.
I'll go over to her house, and the place has a giant garden that's secluded from the other houses, and it's warm and sunny. She's sitting on the patio with two bottles of Sauvignon Blanc, one of them empty. The Schmidts could really knock it back. We're sitting out there a couple of hours, yakking. I'm in a state of semi-captivation over the size of her hair, thinking, how do you get to do that? She's getting pretty sloshed. I could just listen to your voice all day, Harry. I love British accents. I'll say to her, so are you dating anyone, Ruth? Oh, God, honey, I wish. I'm 67 years old, for Christ's sakes. I'm not 107. Harry, I'll be frank with you. Some days I sit around here thinking, am I ever going to have sex again? Oh, Harry, I don't like guys my age. It's a problem. I should move to your country. I'm so crazy about all things British. All I do all day is watch British TV and drink. Ruth, I was just thinking, shall we have a one-off bonding moment that's just between you and I?
A secret? Harry, I love it. What?
Ruth, would you like to suck my cock?
What, here? On the patio?
No one can see. The garden's completely bushed off.
You're my kid's friend.
That's nothing to do with Mark. It's between you and me.
Harry, I have never been propositioned like that in my life.
That's how we roll in London. We desire something, we go for it.
Well? You're not uncircumcised, are you? No offense to people who are uncircumcised, but I'm Jewish, Harry. I mean, I'm not Orthodox or anything, but I don't think I could put an uncircumcised penis in my mouth. I think I would gag. I can't eat shrimp either.
When I get into the apartment, Mark says, how was it with my mom? Oh, Ma, we had the best visit. Thanks for doing that, Harry. It was my treat, really. She gave me a lot of pleasure. She really extended herself to me. In fact, I would say she almost overextended herself. He puts his arms around me and says, I love that you're having this whole thing with my mom. It just makes me feel closer to you. She never liked any of the girls I dated. He kisses me, and there's something different.
about it. We're hugging and kissing. It's very sweet. Afterwards, we're sprawled out on the bed.